everybody. Welcome to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network, your one-stop shop for animation and everything cartoony-ish. Ish. Today, I am Tucky, and I'm joined by Rob and Mark.
Hello.
Hello.
Notice I was saying today I'm Tucky, tomorrow I might be someone else.
I did notice that. I was just kind of like, today you're Tucky? Who are you normally?
I go by Pamela.
I was going to do the boss bit. I'm a ghost. I'm a shadow. I'm gone.
I was expecting a Mighty Boosh one. I was like, I go by many names.
You're winging us.
I'll come and admit it, Tucky. You love the IT crowd.
I do. I really do. It pains me slightly, but I do.
So anyway, this is not a show about the IT crowd and how good it is. This is a show about animation. But before that, how are you two?
Yeah.
it's okay. I've kind of plateaued. this week, I went to see Battle Angel Alita at the cinema.
Yes. I don't want to talk about it yet because I'm going to see it in the next couple of days. So can we talk about it next show?
All I'm saying is it reached the expectations I had of it from our previous discussion on a previous episode.
Okay, right. Leave it at that because I don't want to talk any more about it. We are going to cover it on the next episode, so look forward to it.
I'm excited. I've been away for that long. It's like, where do I start? What? I have watched many, many anime and read many, many manga and binged many, many light novels. That's about it.
See, he's in the right place, isn't he, Tucky? He got the right bus this week.
I have been playing a bit of Jump Force, or should we call it Jump Farce? Because that is a bad game.
Wow. Mark, how old are you again?
How old am I?
Yes.
I am 30.
Oh wow. It's happened, Tucky. We've proved it. As soon as you hit 30, you start making dad jokes.
It doesn't
matter if you don't have kids, you still make them.
It's really not a good game. It's like, if you've ever played, if everyone's played the previous Jump game?
Jump Plus.
Yes, the one that was also mediocre.
I platinumed that game. I liked it.
Was that the
Jump Stars?
It was the one that was reskinned from One Piece Burn and Blood.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
yeah. It's exactly the same game, only the like half the roster.
Then
it's like
what's
you
the
lose
point?
Like many, many Shonen Jump protagonists. But hey, you can use Deku as a punching bag.
Please say they've kept Seki-kun in.
No. Bort's in though.
See, that's what annoys me about these games. Modern games like that are like modern biscuits. You're paying more, but getting much less.
Yeah, it's just... The roster is shockingly bad.
Well, the thing is, DLC will make money for them. And they'll be holding back the good stuff. I know what these gaming companies are like these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just...
Well, in positive news, Kingdom Hearts 3 is amazing.
Oh, well, that's good.
It's all right.
It's better than R8.
It's all right.
I've got Xehanort standing over us in my sleep. I know it's R8.
All I'm saying is, it's all right. It's a Kingdom Hearts game.
Well, everything's tied up in a nice, neat bow. Like, 12 years of absolute what the heck's going on. And it's all wrapped up nice and neat. Like everybody comes together, everything's finished and finalized. And for some reason, there's like a hidden trailer where like Sora's in Japan. Spoiler alert! Before, it looks like I thought it was Sora's going to be in Jump. I thought that was the thing because like all the Jump characters in the real world. So I thought it was like teasing that Sora's going to be in the Jump game, but apparently it's something completely different.
Probably. But anyway, we've done enough talk about video games. Let's move on to what we're really here about.
Hardcore animation.
Yes, we will go through it frame by frame. That's how hardcore we are.
Oh, dear.
We're going to talk about onion skinning, and we're going to talk about stop motion and moving things just slightly.
Ah, oh, yeah. Speaking of onion skinning and jump, I have been watching Food Wars again.
Oh, there had to be porn.
I was waiting for a Shrek reference.
I was going to say that there had to be food porn in there somewhere.
Well, I was trying to do the whole skin and onions thing, but it backfired.
It's so terrible it makes you cry.
Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, otherwise known as The Second Plate, because it's not called Season 2, it's The Second Plate. And the third plate, and I believe we've just had the fourth plate.
See, I never understood that, right? What they should have done with the whole Food Wars thing was waited until the manga was much further along, right? And then decided, okay, we know how long the manga is, we know what story arcs there are in the manga, so we'll go with starter, you know? We'll go with, like, aperitif, starter, you know, fish course. Meat course, whatever, and do it like
that's way too complex. Could have simplified it down as first course, second course, third course, like finish off with dessert or something, or do the whole Tariko thing, what he does. Like, he's got a set list that's kind of similar to what you're saying, Rob.
Yeah,
but it's like the best of that. Oh, I missed Tariko. That was a good food based anime.
That was a fun series, but he's not in Jump Force. Well, neither's Soma, and he's a little bit more relevant at the moment in Shonen Jump.
Yeah, but what's he gonna do against the likes of Luffy or Goku or something like that?
Oh, bash them with a cloche? Give them food poisoning?
Exactly, food poisoning. Just keep feeding them. All of these Jump protagonists like just eat food equivalent to like 1,000 men.
Peanut butter covered squid.
Or you could just be in the background giving missions out. See, we know what we're on about. We could make a better game.
Are you sure you know what you're on about?
No. So yeah, Food Wars, The Second Plate, takes place immediately after the first season, unsurprisingly. However, almost straight away it runs into a major problem in the fact that the first season ended halfway through a tournament arc. Our favourite of all of the arcs. And, yeah. I don't know, I'd say it's Food Wars, it's good, but this is literally just the tournament arc, plus with a little small extra story arc on the end. So I don't really feel like I was getting a Season 2. I just felt I was just getting Season 1.5. And, yeah, it's everything you expect from Food Wars. There's weird over-the-top battles, there's food porn, claws explode from people after eating food. It's everything you expect, but I don't know, there was something about it, about this season. Maybe it was because last season was 24 episodes, I believe, or 26 episodes. We did cover it in like Keyframe 88, I believe.
Yeah.
However, this is 12 episodes, and most of that is finishing up a story arc that they started previously. Now, I know this is quite common in stuff like One Piece and Naruto, where they've got that many series out, where they just keep continuing it forever. However, Food Wars, like I say, I can't remember if it's got 3 seasons or possibly 4.
I think it's on the 4th.
So it feels like there's not a lot of content for what you're actually getting. And it's not bad, but it's just kind of like, if you're not into this whole tournament arc that they keep throwing out, if you like the more slice of life aspects of Food Wars, which, to be honest, that's what sells me more in the series, you're probably not going to have quite as fun of a time as you would with Season 1. The dub and all that is decent. There's some kind of bits here and there, which I think we did cover on last time, but it's nothing over the top bad, but it's nothing that I would kind of say, oh yeah, you need to desperately watch the dub. The sub is more than substantial for it. And yeah, there's not really much to say about it. If you've kind of seen Food Wars and you kind of know what you're expecting from here, it's just the end of the tournament arc, plus with a few extra episodes where they do a different arc and then they kind of roll into the next big story arc after that.
Yeah. Do you know what my problem with the season two onwards of Food Wars is? First season, okay, fine. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Food Wars, I'll be honest. And you guys know this. I think that a lot of the fan service is completely unnecessary, doesn't need to be there, doesn't add anything to the story, and it could have been done in much better ways. That was proven by the likes of Yakitate Japan, right?
Yeah.
The whole reaction thing that Yakitate Japan had, they could have gone down a much more different route than the typical fan service thing. But my main problem with Food Wars Season 2 and Season 3 and whatever is that now you have this rise in shows about food, food porn, as we've started calling it.
Yeah. Right?
And so you have the likes of Restaurant to Another World, Izakaya Nobu, and various others like that, where the focus is very much on food. Yes, they're both fantasy shows that are about food, but the point still stands. There is a lot more variety now, whereas when Food Wars started, how many shows were there about food that were airing at that point?
Exactly. It was kind of like, on its own, it's kind of like, it kind of somewhat reinvigorated the whole food genre.
I wouldn't say it reinvigorated it. It brought attention to it, yeah. But when you look at the manga side of things, the food genre never really went away. It just kind of faded away in anime because, well, it's anime. Things go in cycles.
Yeah.
Right, it brought it to the forefront. But the thing was, it became like relevant for a mass audience. Yeah, the exploding clothing part made fantastic gifts. Memes were made. People shared it about, and it just, you know, it's like, look, we're here, and it's like, oh, I'm taking notes of you because exploding clothes.
Yeah.
Now, when you get into it, I mean, it does have quite a bit of gastronomic science, like research behind it. Like, there's a lot of really technical cooking skills.
Yeah.
That these kids know off by heart. So educational, definitely.
Oh, but, definitely.
Like you say, like why use fan service when you've got something that's more for the mind than the eyes?
Yeah.
You and I had this discussion before, Tucky, and I think you were there as well, Mark, when we were talking about Restaurant to Another World, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And Tucky and I were both saying, that show makes us both feel hungry because the amount of attention that was paid to the food, which is about the same as is paid on Food Wars. You know, when they do the presentation of the food, of the finished bread. It's just they spend a long time on the reactions. But I wouldn't feel hungry while watching Food Wars, whereas I would while watching Restaurant to Another World.
See, I did feel hungry from watching Food Wars. It did make me want to eat more food. But I feel like a lot of these series have done that. I've been reading the Vending Machine light novel, and that made me want to go to a vending machine and eat curry ramen because, I don't know, maybe that's just the way my mind works. But Food Wars, it's like, I love the series. I mean, at the moment in the manga, I would say it's been My Hero Academia levels of Pua, but it's never been incredibly bad. It does have a few issues with its pacing. It does take a lot of time to get somewhere. For example, in this current arc, there's 12 episodes, but it feels like they really drag it all out. It's got a few issues with its cast of characters, where even in season two, we kind of see the characters who are going to be around for the rest of the series. A lot of the characters who were introduced in season one have quickly became irrelevant.
Hmm.
Yeah, I noticed that with the Italian kid. Was it the Aludini kid?
The Aludini,
Where like a bit based up, like, you know, I'm going to be your ultimate rival, and like next thing you know, he's absolutely nothing, a pathetic piece of trash that's just an afterthought.
That's my point with it though, and I think that's one of the reasons why Restaurant to Another World I related to a lot more than I do Food Wars, is because Food Wars to me seems wasteful. I used to work in a kitchen. I spent a long time working in restaurants and in kitchens. And so one of the things that I was always taught was not to waste things. And for me, the way Food Wars handles a lot of the characters and a lot of the development of the characters, it's very, very wasteful. Mm-hmm. Whereas Restaurant to Another World is very direct. It says, okay, this is what people are expecting. This is what we're going to give them.
Yeah, I would completely agree. But yeah, to sum things up, Food Wars Second Plate, it's more Food Wars. It's not really great for rewatching something. You can't, if you like season two, you've got to basically rewatch season one before you get into season two. It's just more Food Wars, really. It's nothing. It's not setting the world on fire or anything like that anymore. It's just more of the same.
Yeah. I would say if you've started it, definitely continue it because it does have a decent story to it in places. I mean, if you kind of torn out the over-the-top reactions, apart from like the Fort Chase Peter guy, you'll see if you, I think it's like in season three or four where Fort Chase Peter guy makes his appearance. but it turns political, which is a thing I didn't expect from something that was initially people's claws blown off to like the inner workings. Cause we've always said like this whole, you know, the school council trope in anime, there's always a school council that has like more power than the government itself.
Yeah.
In this show, that's actually true. So
yeah, to be honest, I kind of feel like Food Wars has been really good. I would say it up until about mid last year when they kind of finished off. I'm going to say that when they finished off the story, they could have ended the whole thing at that point. And now it's kind of like into
this new arc with the dark chefs and stuff like that. I'm like, do you know what it is? Do you know what it is? It's the bloody Fullbringers from Bleach. It's that all over again. It's the final Getsuga Tensho, and they're like, oh no, we can't end it there. We need more. So yeah, do this.
I was really going to refer to stuff like Naruto and Bleach, where they kind of could have been ended a lot earlier than they should have been. Well, they could have been ended a lot earlier than they were.
Yeah.
But they kind of were dragged on and on. I mean, Food Wars is still putting out some great things, like Chainsaw Knife Lady or whatever she was. That
can I just point out?
It's really fun, but
yeah, it's really fun. Also, totally ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's like it was fun. But it's like it's still after that, it kind of just went back into just being like, ugh. And it's like, yeah, it needs to be ended. And if they can't think of anything decent to do with it,
that's my point. It's all right saying that the chainsaw thing was great. I thought it was a cool thing as well. Don't get me wrong. Totally ridiculous. Cool, yes. But it's a gimmick and that's it. And when a manga or any story of any type is relying on gimmicks for it to keep going, then it's done. Forget about it. Leave it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's shown promise here and there, but it's like, it's still, it's
thing it's is, it's done. Nowhere near the level it was.
Exactly.
And when you're at that point, you might as well just say, right, wash your hands of it, clean everything down.
Hang up your apron, Food Wars.
Yeah, just wipe down the kitchen, turn off the lights, go home.
Exactly. Simple. Right, next one.
Kiznaiva. Oh, God. Yes, Kiznaiva. Yay, Kiznaiva. No, I know I said that with far too much excitement.
It sounds like some kind of weird 80s, like, detective show, you know, like Knight Rider and stuff like that.
Well, Kiznaiva is one of those shows, and I remember this. There was a thing that they did, which was the episode zero of Kiznaiva. And I just want to get this out of the way. 2 years after Kill la Kill, Studio Trigger is back. I'm like, oh God, it's a Trigger one. And you know my opinion of Trigger. I don't mind them as a studio. I just don't like their fans.
Fantastic and Only Fools and Horses, though.
You're totally right about that, Dave. But Kiznaiva, it's produced by Trigger and Aniplex and Crunchyroll. And it's written by Mari Okada, who is a fairly talented person. I like some of her work. She's done all sorts of scripts and screenplays that have been ranging from good to decent. I mean, she did the screenplay for Aria the Natural. And you know how much I love Aria. So she's got some really good stuff in her body of work as, you know, a series composition or screenplay or stuff like that. And so I was tentatively expecting decent things from Kiznaiva. It's the directorial debut of Hiroshi Kobayashi. He was the assistant director of Rage of Bahamut and an episode director for Kill la Kill. So, got some skills? Maybe. We'll see. But Kiznaiva is yet another high school action drama involving superpowers and stuff like that.
Hang on, we haven't got anything like that in anime. This is groundbreaking.
Yeah. It's a science fiction story. And when I say superpowers, well, we'll get to that in a second. It's not superpowers as you would expect. And I think that's where the difference is. So, anyway, the story is about Katsuhira Agata, who is a quiet and reserved teenage boy.
As they all are.
Yeah, and you see him at the beginning of the very first episode, and he's running. He's a young boy at that point, and he's running. And then he sees the girl standing at the top of something, and she goes, you'll get your pain back. And he's like, don't leave me alone, and everything like that. And I'm like, oh, God, what a cheesy, stereotypical beginning. And then he has a cross mark on his chest, and he's in pain. And then all of a sudden, you see him later on, after his hair has turned white in that incident, and he is kind of this taciturn, very placid boy. He's a teenager. He's getting bullied all the time, but he doesn't react because he apparently has no sense of pain. And he's at school with a bunch of other people, and they all are linked together over the course of the first episode into this thing called the Kiznaiva Project, and they're linked together by one of the girls at school, who's called Noriko Sonozaki. And Noriko blames Katsuhira for all of this. She basically pins the blame on him, saying he jumped off the stairs trying to kill himself, was fatally damaged, and now all of you are linked to him, right? All that pain from him is now going to be divided amongst all of you, when she's the one who actually pushed him off the stairs. Long story there. But anyway, that's just the first episode. But that lays the foundations for all sorts of things that, in a certain way, weirdly, reminded me of, do you remember World Conquest Zvezda Plot?
No, I don't remember it, but I'm kind of getting the impression that we've, like, seen similar stuff to this before.
Yeah, see, the thing is, Noriko and these other kids and Katsuhira, they're all friends from childhood and things happened and yada, 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 and she wants everybody to be connected through their pain. How emo is that?
That's got to say, starting after school goth club or something.
Yeah, I know. But then you've got to go down the route of goth to boss. Sorry, I couldn't resist. A little IT crowd joke. But anyway, my big problem with Kiznaiva, in terms of the character designs, it's fine. In terms of the animation, it's fine. Nothing wrong with it. The voice acting is fairly decent. Again, no problem with that. English voice acting could be better. The English dub could be better.
Looking at the cast, there's no standout names.
It doesn't need standout names, but it's just, I think when it came to adapting the Japanese dialogue into English, the fact that the series refers to pain in a specific way and refers to it a lot, because the whole Kiznaiva system, is a system that connects people through shared pain and suffering, both physical and emotional. And so there are only so many words in the English language for stuff like that.
Yeah. Where,
you know, whereas Japanese has a word for basically everything, doesn't it?
Yes, it definitely does.
I think so.
That's, I think, part of the problem with the English dub is that the English language is kind of limited in certain ways. It's a lot more black and white than other languages are. The contrast between one thing and another is a lot more harsh than it is in other languages. But anyway, leaving that to one side, the English dub is serviceable. The problem isn't any of the production side of things. The music's fine. I particularly like the opening sequence and the choice of track for the opening sequence. Particularly like that. It's very well put together, very stylish, very well done. Good job on that. The problem is, well, everything to do with the story. It's nigh on impossible to become absorbed in the story when you've kind of seen it all before.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the biggest problem with Kiznaiva. You have the main culprit character, Noriko, explaining to Katsuhira that the seven deadly sins, this is the first episode again, seven deadly sins is a Christian concept, in particular Catholicism. I'm like, well, that's incorrect because it wasn't a Christian concept. It came from Dante Alighieri. So it never came from the church in the first place. It's just people adopted it and assumed it was part of Christianity, but that's not the case at all. But I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to be pedantic and pick faults like that because that's fine. I'll let it go this time. But then she goes on to categorize the modern Japanese version of the seven deadly sins. And so she categorizes them as the girl who's aloof and knows everything and is always studying. She would be high and mighty. The girl who's always trying to be the good girl is the goody two shoes. The girl who's a bit ditzy and has twin tails and always doing weird stuff and summoning fairies and stuff like that. She's delusional and stuff like that.
Hang on. So you're telling me that they're trying to reference a biblical biblical sins in a way to just being anime girl tropes?
Well, not just anime girl tropes, anime boy tropes as well.
So, oh, God. This is just tsundere. Oh.
Do you see what I mean? Do you see what I mean? And she explains, and the explanation is logical. Katsuhira has no sense of pain. Therefore, he has no fear, which is logical. That actually does apply, and that is psychologically valid as well. I can confirm that. Looked into this before, and yes, that is what would probably happen if somebody had no sense of pain. They would actually have no fear, because pain induces fear in you. It makes you afraid to do certain things because they hurt.
So is this more like he emotionally can't feel pain, or he physically, or both?
Basically, physically and emotionally, he can't feel pain. So he's not scared of anybody, and because of that, he gets bullied all the time because the bullies want to connect to him in some way, but because they can't connect to him on an emotional level, they basically bully him instead.
So he's got anhidrosis then?
Something like that, yeah.
That's the disease where you can't feel pain, and it's terrible because it's one of them things like pain's the body's way of like...
Yeah, it's telling you something's wrong. It's telling you something's wrong or something's dangerous, don't do it. That's literally what it is. And so, yeah, he's got something like that, but it seems like it's artificially induced if you believe what was going on at the beginning of the episode. So that's my point. The story is very, very, I hate to say slapdash, but no, not slapdash. It flows very well. In terms of the narrative, it's okay. You know, everything flows very, at a reasonable pace. Everything seems to fit together. It's just dull. It's been done before. And no amount of applying seven deadly sins or connecting people through their pain and suffering or whatever, no amount of any of those gimmicks is going to make it a better story. And that's really it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember this was it 2017 when this first came out?
It was 2016.
2016. And I remember Crunchyroll really hyping it up, like proper massive hyping it up. And I remember watching the first few episodes, but when it was getting released, I think it was the end of last year, I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing I watched. And then I was just like, I can't remember a single thing about it. I remember they had some weird designs. I think there was a guy who had his trousers tucked into his socks or something like that. And I was just like, surely for something that was hyped up and something that I actually watched, I should be able to remember at least some bits of it. But even when you're talking about it, I'm just like, no, I don't remember any of this, yeah. Even though I know I watched it.
See, that's the thing. It comes down to lackluster writing, okay? And I'll be honest, I expected better of Marie Okada. There's certain things. I mean, a lot of the characters are basically spoiled teenagers who are overreacting to the slightest thing. For example, oh, you got rejected by the person that you like. You'll get over it. Deal with it. It's not the end of the world, but according to Kisniver, it could be. The world couldn't end because you got rejected.
Oh no, Armageddon. Why didn't you say yes?
And that's my point. It's so dull that I really want to be satirical about it just to improve it. But I may be painting a false picture by doing that.
It's just like one of those ones that's like, is it even worth satire in it? It's just like, it's a weird one that it's like, I don't think anybody even watched it. We see it, it's like, it's triggering. I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, triggered stuff tends to be quite popular.
But yeah. It's like, yeah, no, Trigger are only popular for two shows. Number one is Little Witch Academia. And number two is, let me see. It's naked high school girls with scissors. Or running with scissors, I should say.
I thought you were going to say Gurren Lagann.
No, I was going to say naked high school girls with scissors.
What about Sss Gridman?
Oh, you mean... Gridman.
And actually, come to think of it, there is another series that does remind me of Kisniver, and that was Darling in the Franxx.
Please don't. But anyway, yeah, so like I said, the writing is very lackluster. And in honor of the lackluster writing, are you ready for this? Best elderly geography teacher voice coming right up, because this is the synopsis from my anime list, read in the dullest voice that I can think of. Katsuhiro Agata is a quiet and reserved teenage boy whose sense of pain has all but vanished. His friend Chirari Takashiro can only faintly remember the days before Katsuhiro had undergone this profound change. Now his muffled, complacent demeanor make Katsuhiro a constant target for bullies who exploit him for his egregious sums of money. Where he gets those from, I don't know, but their fists only just manage to make him blink, as even emotions are far from his grasp. However, one day Katsuhiro, Chirari, and four other teenagers are abducted and forced to join the Kizuna system as official Kisnivers. Those taking part are connected through pain. If one member is injured, the others will feel an equal amount of agony. These individuals must become the lab rats and scapegoats of an incomplete system designed with world peace in mind. With their fates literally entwined, the Kisnivers must expose the true selves to each other or risk failing much more than just the Kizuna system. It's so exciting.
Did you put yourself to sleep there? After the third stroke, the time will be 8:05.
Oh, dear. So you wouldn't recommend watching it, would you not?
If you like sleep, yes.
I do like sleep. Ah, oh, so...
Tucky.
Hello. I want to do a Gilbert Godfrey voice. How can I follow it up? Well, I can follow up with Overlord Season 2 or Overlord 2. I love the way they name these things, so simplistic. And this is a Blu-ray/DVD special collector's edition, limited edition, dual format thing. It's got stuff with it.
It's got a special box.
A very special box. And... Oh, what we're going at? You get a 4-disc Amaria, whatever that is, a filler box to contain, 3 art cards, and a fabric poster. It's not your usual paper or, you know, laminated glossy. No. This is fabric. You can put it in the wesh.
All right. So it's a poster that you can actually fold up then.
Yeah. Or roll up.
No. By folding up, it's not going to crease, is it?
Well, you need a steam cleaner if it does leave creases, like.
Well, no, you can just fold it up and put it neatly in one side. You don't need to press it down.
I can't see anybody adorning their bedroom with an Overlord poster in this day and age, fabric or not.
I would. I like Overlord.
I would.
I can't see anybody who's sane and...
An Overlord poster would go well with my poster of Eddie from Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
To be honest, is he into the undead?
No, I just like metal.
To be honest, it's like I really want to own Overlord Season 2, but I really don't want to pay the money that they're wanting for this collector's edition box.
Apparently, it's supposed to be RRP $64.99, but on Zavvi.com, remember them, you can get it for $49.99.
Oh, not bad.
It also just so happens to be exclusive to Zavvi.com,
mm-hmm.
and there is no other way of obtaining the series in Blu-ray form.
Unless you mug somebody who owns said copy.
I was going to say, why not just wait for a couple of months and then eBay?
You could. Maybe by then Manga UK have kind of realised that limiting a popular series to a collector's edition might not be the best way. It didn't work for Sony when they tried to do it.
I've no idea who makes the kind of executive decisions for that kind of marketing. It's baffling. I mean, you can get Overlord Blu-ray for $12.99.
Hmm.
So anyway, but enough of the commercial side of the anime. It's also on Crunchyroll or Funimation or both. I don't know when the deal severed. Did they like wipe one or the other out? I don't know. It's the thing. I've never been back on Funimation's app or the Funimation Now because it's piss poor. And that's a compliment. It's absolutely piss poor.
Anyway, Overlord.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is season two. If you should have watched season one. If not, tough. I'm going into a season two.
Yeah, but I mean, if you haven't watched Overlord season one and you want to watch Overlord season two, you're gonna have no idea what's going on.
All right. Blokey gets trapped in a computer game as it strikes midnight, discovers that he has to live his life now as the overlord / big-ass skeleton.
He's basically like a supreme lich. He's basically a giant magical skeleton.
He's basically the end boss.
Yeah, that's why it's called Overlord. Oh, also, because he's non-human, he's automatically classified as evil, even though he's not really.
So there you go. There's your recap. I think they should rename it now. Final Boss Dossing About.
No, because I think there's a manga called that.
Probably. There'll be a light novel.
It picks up where season one left off. One of his underlings, shall we say, Shaltir, who's like a vampire, kind of turned against him, but it wasn't her fault. So it starts off with like the resolution of that, which is basically she gets punished by him using her as a chair. But as most of his underlings have like some kind of fetishist side to them, she kind of likes it. I don't know what the sexual attraction is of being sat on by a big ass skeleton, but it's her kinks. I'll let her have it.
I don't know. He's got a bony ass, so maybe it's good for her back.
He's just bones.
I don't know, that robe weighs quite a bit.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's good for her back. Maybe it's like, you know, those shiatsu massage things that you get.
I just like the fact that there's like so much happens in Overlord Season 2. We've kind of covered the kinks.
No, we haven't covered the kinks. We haven't even got to the lizards.
Oh, no. This was the thing when it first aired on Crunchyroll. Everyone's like, oh, lizard waifu. And it's like, no. Bestiality, no. It's a fantasy setting, yes, but no. Leave lizards to be lizards. It's awful. Awful. Bad people. You know who I'm talking about.
But the lizard men.
Lizard men are all right.
Yeah,
not in a sexual way. Not in a sexual way.
But all I'm saying is the lizard men getting off with the lizard women, that's fine. Because they're lizards, right?
Right. So what actually happens in Overlord Season 2?
Lizards. I think is this like the call it Lizard Man arc or is it?
Yeah, it's the Lizard Man arc.
The Lizard Man, isn't it?
Yeah.
It builds up because like what we saw in the first season was like this kind of enclosed area of Nazarick and slightly a little bit more of Yggdrasil or however you pronounce it, like the wider world. Like the world's not what he remembers from the game as such. So there's a little bit of like a new exploring for him to do, but they focus it more on the internal affairs in his like close circle in season one. Season two, it's basically, I'm going to the corner shop that's just from the corner, and I hope I make it back alive. Like that kind of section of it, where they introduce like the lizard men. They put a bit more focus on his underlings. Sebas, especially, he gets his old. He's like Alfred off Batman. It reminds me a lot of him. And they all get their own little stories. And the other one, the scorpion bloke, you can't remember his name.
Cocytus.
He has his own little. The thing is, he gives off the vibe that he's a wrong'un, but he's loyal. So I don't know.
And he's a warrior.
Yeah, and he's like ice bug guy, or dragon, or whatever he is. So anyway, so he's starting to like make moves to make Nazareth more, kind of more global, sort of. He's planting seeds which will hopefully grow. And they do like season three, season four. You see, like you start to get a payoff. But at the moment, you've got to be patient. You've got to let them sow those big ass skeleton seeds here and there. And like I say, it just builds the world up. Like I say, there's a big focus on the lizards, the different lizard tribes. We'll find out that, you know, it's not just, oh, it's a bloke who looks like a lizard, but there's actually like different types of lizards. And like I say, I think there's like five different tribes. See, there's this whole internal politics involved in it as well.
You know, that's one of the things I really liked about the Lizard Man War. It had clear distinctions between the different tribes of lizards, in not just in terms of how they looked, but also in terms of little things like how they dressed and stuff like that, or their habits as well.
Yeah, I really felt like they were all like separate communities rather than just being lizard men.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They could have been generic and just like, oh, they're all the same anyway. You know, like when you're playing like a video game like on Sword Art Online, where it's like it's the same boss, only it's a slightly different color. But yeah, it's the exact same design. They could have went that route, which would have probably saved time. But like you say, it's a more complex, detailed. I don't know. It's like you can't really research it because it's a fantasy setting, but you can add them little differences that really do make the difference for whoever's watching.
It's called world building.
That's good world building.
Well, it's called world building, full stop. When you're doing world building, yes, there is good world building. Yes, there is bad world building. But if you're even trying world building in the first place, then I take my hat off to you, because a lot of people don't even want to try.
A lot of people ruin it. They ruin what they make. Looking at you, J.K. Rowling, you're ruining it.
All I'm saying is that with Overlord, the Lizard Man arc is a very good arc, no matter what other people say. For me, it was very good.
It's actually quite ironic because all of this season really is just building up the world around Ainz.
Yeah.
Ainz is only kind of appears towards the end of the series. In fully. He's kind of here and there, but it's all down to his underlings.
Yeah. And the thing is, that's what I like about this arc and the next arc, The Men of the Kingdom. For those two arcs, I really thought that was a really smart way of going about it. Because what it did, it pushed Ainz to the back. He became the Overlord in the truest sense. He's the one standing behind all of these other characters.
Exactly.
As the final boss.
And it is. It's a fantastic way of telling the story, and it appears off in season three as well. And I like how they've got this whole thing where he wants to do reconnaissance, but he wants to have that air of authority. So he's got like his double life as the adventurer as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's got a reputation for being like this giant big ass skeleton who's got all this magical power, but he's also this big ass skeleton that's in armor, and he's one of the best adventurers in the world.
Yeah.
And it makes for a fascinating watch. And I mean, you guys have read the light novel and the manga beforehand. So how would you say like the animation rates up to? Because I've only seen the anime.
The way I've been doing it, I haven't actually watched all of season three yet, because I've decided to choose to read the far, far superior light novel and then enjoy the adaptation of it.
See, that's
as much as I love the anime.
Yeah.
I just do feel like the light novel just goes into so much more depth that it...
Yeah. And
it builds everything up even more.
See, for me, it's the same but slightly different because I'm way ahead of you in the light novel. Way ahead of you in the light novel. And so for me, when I was watching the anime adaptations and reading the manga as well, I was just kind of, I've read all this, but it's nice to see it put into picture form.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm kind of like. It's like, I realized very early on, around volume 3, which is the end of season 1, that it's like, this is something I want to be reading and then enjoy the adaptation. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I started reading Overlord a long time before there was the manga or the anime adaptations. But for me, one of the key things about Overlord has always been it's a much darker take on the isekai thing. And with the light novel especially, because I don't think they'll show some of these things in the anime or the manga version.
To kind of reinforce your point, the Men of the Kingdom, most of that's volume 5 and 6.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff when Tsubasa's going around like just doing the day-to-day stuff.
Yep.
That's very much quickly glossed over in the anime.
Mm.
About I think it's probably about the first half of the novel, because I consider Overlord more of a novel than a light novel.
Yeah.
Which is, so it's about 150 pages. That's done in 20 minutes.
Yeah. And so that's the thing. A lot of that stuff that Sebastian gets up to during that time actually becomes relevant later on.
It does. But you don't get quite as much of this very, very, very dark, seedy underworld. You do get the whole bit where that, I can't what the woman's called, where she's literally thrown out. But it's kind of like she's thrown out and she grabs onto him and that's it. You don't get the whole of her plight. You don't get Sebastian where he's kind of like addressing her, where he kind of runs down of the stuff that actually happened to her.
Oh, you do in the anime.
It's very much, I felt it was very much skirted over, whereas in the light novel, it kind of went very in-depth.
It dwells on it a lot more in the light novel. But that's the thing. They've got time constraints when it comes to the anime version of it. So it's understandable that they will skim over certain things. They won't dwell on it in the way that the novel probably did. The thing that I've always found surprising about these light novel adaptations when it comes to anime is just how much they're willing to cut out that is actually relevant. And instead of making a series longer, they'll basically try and keep it to the 12, 13 episodes. And that's something that they really need to think about seriously, because if you've got a good story, something like Overlord, for example, where there is a lot of detail that you could go into, there's a lot of backstory, there's a lot of side stories with other characters that you could literally focus on.
Yeah.
But instead of doing that, they'll slavishly try and keep to a 12 or 13 episode format. Instead of saying, okay, we're going to do 12 to 13 episodes, but what we'll do, we'll approach it in, say, the Standalone Complex way. So what Standalone Complex did, the first season and second gig, what they did very, very well was the standalone story was basically the Individual 11 or the Laughing Man or something like that. Yeah?
Yeah.
Whereas the complex part were individual stories interspersed in amongst the standalone stories.
Yeah.
And so what you had, those complex stories, those were basically snapshots of the world. It added to the world building, it added to the development of the characters and the depth of the characters, but they weren't necessarily related to the main storyline.
Right? Yeah.
They weren't filler because they were very relevant. And I'm saying that if they'd taken that approach with Overlord, it might have been a much more fleshed out series.
Yeah.
It's really weird to hear people say, like, you know, I'd love to see it more padded out, especially in this day and age, but sometimes a series does need that. And the thing is, like I say, I've only seen the anime side of it, and it kind of feels like they are rushing to something.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
I've been feeling that with a few shows that are airing right now. That time I got reincarnated as a slime, I feel they're rushing a bit more now than they were before. It started off very, very well, but now in the second half of the season, I actually think they're rushing it a lot more than they need to.
Yeah, that one's where I'm kind of unsure, because I'm sure they've announced the voice actor for a character who only appears in Volume 5. However, really, that the series should be ending at the end of Volume 4, so I've got to worry that they're going to skim through a lot of stuff in Volume 4 to get to stuff in Volume 5.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's a whole host of stuff. Again, it's one of those ones where the world building is important, and so they need to focus on those individual episodes that they're not filler. They are very relevant, and they will come directly from the novels. You know, yeah. Come directly from the original story by Fuse. And those episodes will add to the world building, will add to the complexity and the layers that are in the story. It's the same, and I'm really hoping that they don't do that with the Rise of the Shield Hero as well. I'm hoping that they don't rush it. They don't suddenly decide we need to cram as much of this in as possible.
I've only just started reading Shield Hero, and I'm already aware that they've did the first volume in like 4 episodes.
Yeah.
That seems quite quick to me.
The thing is, at least they got 4 episodes for the first volume.
Hmm.
There are a lot of shows where they do the first volume in 2 or 1 episode.
Yeah, and then there's stuff like Konosuba where they did like 5 episodes on volume 1.
Yeah.
And there's only 10 episodes. Anyway, it's getting back to Overlord because I'm aware that we've got a few other things. Would you recommend it, Tucky?
I would recommend it. I say it's a decent watch, especially like in a series. It's one of those ones that doesn't feel like a marathon if you're watching it or marathoning it. And it's a really good show, and like you say, the world building's there. It doesn't, like with most shows, it's just like, here's the premise, run with that premise. With this one, it pads it out. It's got, like, this is going on, but this is going on in the background, and this is in the foreground, this is to your left, this is to your right. It's more, you know, there's no surprises, which is, you know, it's kind of good, but it's like, you know, a constant barrage of like, oh, well, this is now tying into this bit. And like I said, I've watched season 3 as well, and season 3 is, it's really good.
Hmm.
Just the, like you say, that whole scene where they try and raid Nazarick, that is pretty brutal how they've animated it.
Yeah. There's a couple of things in the novels that they don't go into in the anime series. Trust me on that.
Yeah, I will. Obviously, but we've got to go on the anime. And I mean, for £50, I'd say it's still pricey in this day and age, but, you know, people must really want that fabric poster.
I think it's more pricey knowing that it's £50 for this, and it's going to be another £50 for when season 3 drops.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the barrier.
Yeah. Especially when you know that the first season is only £13.
Yeah, well, I bought the normal version of the first season, so if I get the first one, it's going to be a normal Blu-ray, then next to it, it's going to be this massive collector's edition, then, yeah, it doesn't look good on the shelf.
Anyway, Mark,
let's move on.
Speaking of things that look good on the shelf.
Yeah, a while before episode 100, I think it was like 98 or 99, I covered Mobile Suit Gundam Thunderbolt December Sky.
Yep.
Now, at that point, it was the subbed-only version that was on YouTube, legally they put on YouTube, and I really enjoyed it. And the Anime Limited released the collector's edition, Blu-ray version of the movie late last year. And I thought, you know what? I liked it enough. I'll try it. And do you know when people see it, they can see the difference between DVD and Blu-ray?
Yes, because I've been saying that for a long time about certain shows.
This is one that is just like, it's just absolutely perfect on Blu-ray. It's some series, for example, Food Wars, it doesn't really matter if you watch it on DVD or Blu-ray, but Gundam Thunderbolt, it's an absolute joy to be able to watch it on Blu-ray. I mean, we all saw it at the cinema. They had a cinema show on late last year in Scotland. And it's amazing when you see something that was really good, and then you just get a whole new appreciation for everything. You get a new appreciation for the animation. The music in Gundam Thunderbolt is absolutely amazingly good. Really fits the mood perfectly, even though it's all in jazz. And it's like, it's quite amazing how you don't get that with watching it on YouTube or watching it on Crunchyroll and stuff like that. It was quite surprising.
I think it's the clarity of it. I'm trying to remember what it was I watched recently that was on Blu-ray, and I was blown away by just the difference in quality. I can't remember what it was, damn it. Give me one
Silent
second.
Silent Voice was like that for me. I got the Blu-ray of Silent Voice.
The Blu-ray of Silent Voice is amazing.
Yeah.
It's very rare for me to actually like buy them because I've got streaming services and I'm not really one for collecting DVDs or Blu-rays, but I collect the manga. But I had to buy Silent Voice because it just came out and I was ranting and raving to Donna of how good this like movie was. And it's like, you know what, I'm going to actually buy a Blu-ray and show you how good it was.
Yeah.
And it lived up to, for a tenner, I couldn't argue.
Yeah, it's a
Do you know what really it was? I remember what it was. The one that impressed me with just the quality on Blu-ray was 5 centimeters per second.
Oh, yeah, because that one had it had a DVD release.
A long time ago.
Yeah, probably 2010 or something. Yeah. 2011.
And the Blu-ray release was not long ago. And so, yeah, 5 centimeters per second when I watch it on Blu-ray. And just the level of detail, because the upscaling onto Blu-ray, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's quite amazing when you don't... Sometimes you don't think about it when you're just watching purely Blu-ray or you're watching purely DVD. You don't tend to notice the big difference. But, I mean, Guns of Thunderball, it's well worth it. I mean, I saw its praises about this time last year, actually, I think it was. Just to give a little synopsis of it, it's taking place at the same time as the end of the Universal Century. So it's taking place around the same time as the original Mobile Suit Gundam in a kind of... It's kind of like known as the Thunderbolt Sector. It's like this area where it's kind of like no man's land. They're not... The Zeon and the Earth Federation, they're not advancing quite as much. The kind of areas are getting taken, then taken back, and it's just littered with debris. It's littered with bodies. And it's amazing how you see on both sides, because originally Mobile Suit Gundam was very much Earth Federation good, Zeon are evil, and this one, it very much blurs the lines and shows how desperate both sides are getting to the extent of what they're doing to some of the soldiers. That, like, for example, one of them, he loses his limbs and they're literally putting them into the Gundam so he can pilot it. And it's like, you can see how, it's a very much darker turn for this period of time that we've been covered. That's been covered a lot in the Gundam media. Well, it's really worth watching. It's like 70 minutes. If you like Gundam, it's like you can watch it on a night without having to sit and watch episodes and episodes. It's really good and definitely worth checking out.
I like the envisionment of like a World War One kind of thing, but with mechs.
Yeah. Makes total sense.
It does. It's still a war.
The thing is, it makes sense in the way that Pat LaBeouf makes sense. And that's one of the reasons why I think it works.
Yeah. But it's definitely, it's a different tone. I mean, I know there is a lot of dark Gundam series, but comparing this to the original Mobile Suit Gundam, it's very much a different kettle of fish.
Yeah, first one was more like a political thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. But anyways, enough about Gundam. I believe Rob has something else.
Yes, I do. Just to quote, I think the lines are, if everyone is not special, then you can be what you want to be.
Well, what quote's that?
It's the first line of the opening theme.
I thought you were quoting Kisnavia.
No.
I thought you were doing that quote, if everyone's special, then no one is special.
No, if everyone's not special, then you can be what you want to be. Which, weirdly enough, makes total sense when the show you're talking about is Mob Psycho, or to give it its full title, Mob Psycho 100. I don't know why we left the 100 off, because the 100 is kind of important.
Kind of?
Yeah, it's kind of important, isn't it?
Just a smidge.
So anyway, Mob Psycho, it's the second major manga series by one. And it's for me, the better series.
I'd say that, personally, I find them about equal.
I prefer Mob Psycho to One Punch Man. And I can explain why. See, where One Punch Man is very much a parody of the superhero genre, Mob Psycho was something that was very, very different. Yes, it was a parody, but do you guys know what it was a parody of?
Everything.
No. It was a parody of something specific.
Fraud psychics?
Nope.
What?
You'll figure it out. I guarantee you you'll figure it out. So, Mob Psycho is about 8th grader Shigeo Kageyama, whose nickname is Mob because he basically looks like just a normal character from anywhere that you'd see. Somebody who you wouldn't really pay attention to. A mob character. That's where his nickname comes from. And Mob is basically a high school, you know, he's an 8th grader and he is just going to school every day. He's got a younger brother called Ritsu. He has a problem, you know, he has problems at home with things. He has problems at school with things. He's very shy. But Mob has a secret. And the secret is that Mob is a psychic and an extremely powerful one at that. You know, he lives at home with his parents and his younger brother. And he has a problem when he's eating. Sometimes he accidentally bends spoons. And his mum is just kind of, look, you're doing it again. You've got to break that habit. And that's what I love about that particular aspect of Mob's life, is that his parents are so totally at home and totally comfortable with him having psychic powers. They don't see it as anything bothersome. They just say, oh, you know, his dad's like, it's just a phase. He's got to grow out of it. Look, it's puberty, you know.
And knock it off, man. The cat's scared.
But that's the thing. I love that about his family, is that they are so nonplussed about him having psychic abilities. To his parents, he's their son. To his younger brother, he's his older brother. That's all they see him as. And that, I thought, was brilliant. And that's one of the things where it's basically taking the piss out of certain other shows. The other aspect of where it's taking the piss is the fact that he's an 8th grader. Do I need to mention the Chunibyo stuff? What does Chunibyo mean? It means 8th grader syndrome. So Mob, the guy who everybody kind of ignores and the guy who's a little bit shy, is actually what a lot of these 8th graders who suffer from this Chuny syndrome or whatever it is, he's actually what they all imagine themselves to be. He just wants to be normal. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. There's a bit in it, actually, that I really love, and it's he's getting scouted for the psychic after-school club.
Yeah.
And he joins the physical fitness club.
Oh, yeah, the body transformation club.
He just wants to meet girls, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he wants to be popular, he wants to be normal, and he fancies the cute girl in class who's always, you know, flicking her hair and stuff like that, and she's always, you know, pushing her hair behind her ear and everything. He's always like, ha ha, I love you. But he can't say it in those words. But yeah, Mob Psycho is a comedy. It does have serious aspects to it. It's got some very subtle sight gags in there, and it's got some absolutely stupendous slapstick comedy in there. But it's also got some drama in there. I mean, Mob is stressed about a lot of things. And when his stress level reaches 100, he explodes in terms of emotionally, psychically, you know, the end of Akira. It's like that. But he's always trying to control himself. Mob kind of works part-time for a... is he a fraud? Isn't he a fraud? We don't know what Reagan is. He is definitely a fraud, though. He is definitely a fraud. But the thing is, he's a fraud who's not a fraud because Mob works for him, and Mob is an actual psychic. And when things get too tough and when the salt isn't working, Reagan calls Mob. And Mob exercises the spirits. But that's the thing. I think Reagan is an amazing character because he doesn't actually have any psychic abilities, but Mob still regards Reagan as his master. Now, Mob knows that Reagan doesn't have any abilities, but Reagan is kind of like a spiritual anchor for him. He's somebody who keeps him grounded, somebody who tells him what reality is. He's kind of the Granny Weatherwax character, to quote a Discworld character from Terry Pratchett's series of novels. The whole Granny Weatherwax thing is that in one of the novels, she basically says, you have to know what's real, what's not, and what's the difference. And I think that's the character that Reagan plays for Mob. He's the one who tells him what's real and what's not, and what's what the difference is between the two.
Yeah.
And that's highlighted in the last episode as well, which I'm not going to go into because that is a spoiler. I love the art style. I love the colours. I love the art style. Now, the art style is taken directly from One's manga. The other reason why I prefer Mob Psycho to One Punch Man is that Mob Psycho wasn't redrawn by a professional manga artist. It's
I've been reading the manga, and it's like, it's very different compared to One Punch Man. It's very rough around the edges.
Yeah, but
it works with that.
That's because One Punch Man, the original One Punch Man webcomic, is so rough.
Yeah.
But it was redrawn by, what's his name? I forgot his name.
The Ice Shield 21 guy.
Yeah, he's the artist who worked on Ice Shield 21. Whereas Mob Psycho is all just One, and so he has full creative control. So everything that happens in Mob Psycho is directly from One. They've used that art style in the anime, but what they've done, they've added some really interesting colours and really interesting effects to the animation, and it works so well. I mean, during the action scenes and during psychic explosions and during psychic battles, or things that involve extrasensory perception or telepathy or stuff like that, there's always something interesting going on. Or when there's spirits around, there's always something interesting. It's this really organic style of animation, I suppose. And it's one of those things that I've seen in shows like Tetsuo and Birdie Decode 2. And I suppose Studio Trigger, famous for using that particular style of animation in shows like Kill la Kill and stuff like that. But it's used so well here. And, the studio who's animating it is Bones. So good job to them. The other thing as well is the director, Yuzuru Tachikawa, has done a really good job in following the manga, because it doesn't try to cram everything into 12 episodes. It takes its time. It allows space for the show to actually do the comedy and do the serious stuff. And that, to me, is such a good aspect to this. That's something that I don't see a lot outside, in other shows outside of Gintama, where they allow it to do the serious stuff and do the comedy stuff. You know, they just give it the space, give the show the space to actually do those things and do what it does well. So, yeah, Mob Psycho I'm a big fan of in the first place, and I absolutely adored the first season. It's wonderful. And also, you know the mini episodes that he did for Mob Psycho?
Oh, yeah.
They're all on the Blu-ray as well.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. All the mini episodes are on the Blu-ray, because those are brilliant. I mean, in the first episode when Reagan has the woman and her boyfriend, he's like, "Yes, we'll remove the curse, and then your girlfriend's face will go back to how it used to be." He's like, "She's always looked like that." You're like, "Oh crap!"
See, I love the comedy in it. There's one, the friend, was it Taruki?
Yeah.
The hair, the hair stack. Yes. The overcompensating wig. It is. That part, I lost
that's,
it.
That's what I mean. There's some brilliant and some subtle sight gags in there that, I think Mob Psycho is one of those shows where you need to watch it more than once to get everything that's going on, because it's got some very, very subtle things in there. I will say this. Both dubs are excellent. The English dub is excellent. The Japanese dub is excellent. So it doesn't matter which one you use. They've done a very good job on transferring the humour of the Japanese dub into the English dub.
Oh, good.
So this is eminently watchable in either language. I've got to pay particular plaudits to the opening sequence, which is, like the Kiznaiva one, it's very, very funky. It's very stylish. But the Mob Choir is just, it's one of those bizarre songs that will just stick in your head. You might not realize it.
My head now. I've got this, mob, side mob, mob.
Yeah. And they're just counting. All they're doing is counting to 100 in the song.
It's the best way to count to 100, though.
Yeah, with heavy guitars and stuff like that. But yeah, Mob Psycho 2 is out now. And so if you are going to watch Mob Psycho 2, then definitely get the Blu-ray for Mob Psycho. Watch that first, because it's so worth it. You know, it's so worth watching this in Blu-ray because of the animation style and because of the art style. One of the problems with watching it in a lower resolution is that outlines can become dull and action can become blurry. Whereas if you're watching it in Blu-ray, where you have a much higher resolution, then everything is much crisper, much cleaner. You can make out details better. It's so worth getting the Blu-ray for this.
Mm. I think we've kind of agreed on this through this episode that buy Blu-rays.
Whatever you can.
Especially if it's got a bit of cloth in it.
Yeah. It doesn't go too far into the story, and it does cover a good portion of the manga, but it doesn't
covers about the first three or four volumes.
Yeah, it doesn't cover the whole story. Basically, they've got a good for Mob. If they basically keep at it the same, at the same kind of pacing, they've easily got like three seasons of Mob Psycho out of the manga.
Yeah.
Because if you do the second season as the boss of, well, I'm just going to leave it at that because that's a spoiler. And then the third season is the broccoli, which again isn't a spoiler because no one has a clue what I'm talking about. Do you see what I mean?
I have no idea.
See?
When you're saying boss, is it the boss of Claw? Is that what you, because that's been in season one.
Yeah. It's just for people who haven't seen season one.
Well, they don't know what I'm saying Claw for.
True. So, yeah, the boss of Claw, third season being the broccoli. That works, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. That's easily three seasons. So, yeah, Mob Psycho, I heartily recommend.
Awesome.
On the back of that, then, given what we've had today, can you guys think of any shows that you would recommend alongside what you covered?
Well, Psyche-kun for the old
Mob Psycho, yeah. It has to be Psyche-kun.
Can I recommend Gundam to go with Gundam?
Actually, do you know what I was going to do? You know, with Gundam Thunderbolt, there was something I was going to recommend to go alongside it.
Patlaball
was one, but I was also going to recommend the original Macross series.
Yeah. If you like your mechs, Patlaball, Macross, you'll be doing good.
No, I think the original Macross series in particular, which I think, if I remember rightly, they did a movie version of it and released it in the UK called Do You Remember Love? The reason why I'm saying that one is because the way you were describing Gundam Thunderbolt December Sky, it reminded me a little bit of that.
Yeah. If you want more war and mechs, there's always Full Metal Panic as well.
Well, if you want war and mechs, then there's always the almost catastrophically bad Macross 2 Lovers Again.
Well, apart from that, Food Wars, I think we've spoken enough on the different food anime and stuff like Restaurant of the Another World. Overlord,
I'd say, to be honest, I'd say Goblin Slayer to start
off with. I don't think it's got an anime yet, but I've been reading Defeating the Demon Lord is a Cinch if you've got a ringer.
Yeah.
That's very much between the mixture between Konosuba and Overlord. And yeah.
Thing is, I've got another recommendation to go along with Overlord. And yes, it is an isekai, and I'll be honest, it's probably the first really good isekai in anime.
Which one's that one?
12 Kingdoms.
Oh, yeah.
I would recommend that alongside Overlord, and I think a lot of people have forgotten that 12 Kingdoms exists.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those ones where it was big and then it kind of faded away, didn't it?
It's because, you know, modern anime fans, but 12 Kingdoms is one of those ones where I think that if you don't know it, then you owe it to yourself to watch it. It's a very strange but very, very good story. And it's early noughties. It was out in, I think, 2002 and 2003 or something like that.
Yeah, it was very, very early.
So a good 15 years before the isekai genre became an actual genre, you had an isekai story that was better than most of the isekai stuff that's out now.
Yeah.
What about you, Tucky?
I've said mine. My bits, and yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with most of the rest of what you have recommended. I've got an out special, really. I will say, get yourself watching the Battle Angel Alita animation if you're going to watch the live action. Be careful of the English dub where they call that galley or girly or gully, yeah. Or it's supposed to be like Ali as in like Alita, but you just ignore that part and you'll be fine.
Yeah. I don't know what to recommend for Kiznaiva.
Kokoro Connect.
Actually, that's not a bad recommendation.
Yeah, I would recommend Kokoro Connect.
That works.
Oh, what's it called? We covered it last year, and I've got on me the thing. It begins with a H.
Higurashi?
No, it's that one where they're kind of doing the guy where he's just bored with life and he just tries not to do anything. But there's that girl who's really curious. And they want to try and find out all of the mysteries.
Oh, yeah.
Why can I not remember the name?
She has purple eyes and dark hair, and I'm trying to remember what it was. Damn it! Because her catchphrase is "I'm curious." It was a Kyoani one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's hit something. Why can I not remember it? Because it's really worth watching as well. You know what it is? It'd be quicker for us to get the DVD.
Panda Eru from Hyoka.
Hyoka, that's it. Hyoka. We got it, Mark. We got it.
He's scrambling. We've got the answer.
Hyoka.
Yeah, we got it. We got it. We got it. Yeah, Hyoka. Actually, that makes sense. Hyoka does make sense. So, anyway, that's your lot for this week. If you want to catch up with any of our shows, you'll find everything on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, or whichever podcast provider that you're using. And if you are listening through any of those things, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure, and it does help us improve as well. You can also find all of the stuff that we do on the Geek Show Podcast Network on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. You'll also find our Patreon and our shop on there as well. And that's it from us. We will see you all next week with more stuff about animation. Until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Mark.
And I've been Tucky. Oh, so Tucky and bright.
And we will see you all next week.
Bye.
La da 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 da